Shelley Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Shelley.
January 25, 2022, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. And this indeed is the show you were looking for. How do I know this? Because you're listening to me bang on my microphone stand. Anyway, it is a Tuesday, second broadcast day of the week normally for the O'Shelley Effect, but last night I had electrical issues and did not go live. They are still not resolved, but we're able to do it tonight. Anyway, what I have for you is something unusual. Normally I have Mike Swanson on in the first hour, but he's switching to Thursdays, folks. So we're going to start hearing from Mike. I can't remember if it's this week or next on Thursdays. And Pierce Redman may indeed switch to Thursdays as well. And a brand new third person in the super rotation that used to be on Tuesdays might be there on Thursdays. And I think everybody's going to be happy with the reports we get from a great analyst, author, etc. on Thor's days here on the O'Shelley Effect. But enough of my promotions and asking and everything else. Let's get to the meat of the show tonight. No regular guests tonight. Instead, I have something that I recorded earlier in the day with a friend of ours who is in the Ukraine. Notice I say a friend of ours like as if I've got the La Casa Nostra vibe rolling. But anyway, a friend of ours in the Ukraine who not only brought himself, but brought the missus, as he might say, in order to clarify the situation, because we are receiving many a report, and I'm going to get to some of those after I play this little piece for you guys and get to some other live reports here on the show. But, you know, we're going to cover just a few other pieces of news. Maybe if we have time, we shall see as it permits. But Emir in the Ukrainian area over there, which is in conflict, has been in conflict for some time. You know, his Mrs. Allah, A-L-L-A, not Allah, but Allah, told me that, you know, people need to know that, quite frankly, it's not a conflict. It's been a war for a while. So the contentions of Larry Hancock and all that will also come up during this little interview. So without any further ado, I'll just get to it. So I'm pre-recording this segment right now for the air tonight on Tuesday, but we are doing this earlier in the day. Who do I have with me? Well, I have our friend Amir, who lives in the Ukraine. Again, a little confusing because he has that Aussie sound to his voice, and I do mean Aussie as in Australia. Okay, he has that sound to his voice and definitely has not a Ukrainian background ethnically. Not like it matters, but I just explain who he is and why he sounds the way he does. Meanwhile, we may hear from the weenie dog in the background here, because it is during the day at my home, so we might have a dog bark now and then. Anyways, apologies, but we have a special guest with us, his wife, whose name is Ala. And, you know, hopefully I pronounced that correctly, and we'll leave it at that. But she is someone who is ethnically Ukrainian and also, obviously, lives with them there in Ukraine. So what is it that I have these two people, well, you know, recording with me during the day for? We're hearing a lot in the West currently. We definitely heard from Larry Hancock last week about the behaviors of our friend Vladimir Putin, and I do say that sarcastically. You know, the adversarial nation that is the Russian Federation at this point in time. We talked about the strategies, what's already gone on in the past, and some of the stuff which I discussed with Emir, and quite frankly, I don't hear anybody discussing anywhere else, are some of the realities that, well, let's talk about the people that are part of the game here. Why do I say game? It's not a game. This is conflict. This is going to get people killed. This is going to get territory lost. This is going to get, yeah, the mainstream's telling you that, but they're telling you a different story. And they're not revealing to you anything other than a few images of individuals that might be in trenches or whatever, Some of them in snow, some of them not. They're telling us that the Ukrainian government is requesting this and that and the third thing. They're telling us that this is a challenge to NATO, and some of this is true. But the reality for people on the ground there, I don't hear anybody reporting on. I hear from the spokespeople, even from the Ukrainian government, a little bit over here, but I'm not hearing really what the position from the Ukrainian establishment is at this point. We know the history and the hidden history already. So, like I say, let's actually ask somebody who's there, who might be familiar with the history, who's already lived through, well, frankly, we're waiting on an invasion. No, we're not. We're waiting on the furtherance of something that is already in progress. So I know I make that statement, and it sounds crazy compared to what you're hearing from everybody else, but there's already been a conflict. There's already been shots fired. There's already been territory taken by individuals who are marked as Russian sympathizers or assets, or maybe they really want to rejoin what could have been the Soviet Empire at a certain point. And they told us that about Crimea, which is also a factor. I've discussed Belarus, or, you know, Belarus, depending on whose pronunciation you listen to. I don't think that's right, but discuss that too. All of this is a strategic concern, excuse me. And yeah, the discussions about NATO and what's going to happen. Like I said, let's get to somebody who's actually there, knows the history, has lived through some of it, because, well, they're Ukrainian. So we're going to start with Alla, actually. Alla, first of all, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm all right. Thank you. And you?
I apologize if, because, look, no offense to you at all. I realize that you're very intelligent, speak more than one language. My English might be a little fast and sloppy, so by all means, let me know if you don't understand something I'm asking you.
Just because
of the sloppiness of my language.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Okay. First of all, what is it that you understand about the current situation that maybe has changed in the past couple of weeks? As far as, well, let's be honest, the more than allegedly 100,000 Russian troops at one of the borders of, well, your homeland. I mean, what do you understand about this situation? What has the media told you? Word on the street? Anything you want to offer us here, I'm willing to hear.
Well, the media tell us just facts that more and more Russian troops and weapons are surrounding Ukrainian borders, especially close to the Belarusian borders, and so the situation is becoming more and more tense every day. But the president is trying to calm us down. So this morning and last night, and probably the day before yesterday, he was on TV with a short speech asking us not to worry, that everything is under control, and the USA and probably some partners from the EU, because we know that the EU is not doesn't have the same opinion on the events. So that they are all supporting us as probably better than before.
Well, let me ask you about that right away then, because we are being treated to discussions here in the Western press about, the EU partners would be a part of the NATO alliance. And there are discussions about preparing assets and troops to possibly be sent in to support, although it does not appear to have been done yet. I reported on the Ukrainian president making speeches over the course of about the past week, almost, you know, trying to tell the people to remain calm, that things will be under control, and not to worry. But I also reported on some movements that have been noticed in Belarus again, which is to the north of your country, as I understand the map. Is there any discussion about that in your media, Belarus, or what they're calling military exercises to your north? Have you heard anything about that?
Like all day long on the news, some more episodes are coming about more tanks or Russian troops arriving to the Belarus borders. So and again, I've just read a piece of news about that on the internet.
I see. All right. Well, also, I'm curious if there is Russian media which has been broadcast or sent into Ukraine at this point. Have you seen any of that? And are you aware of what their general statements are about this being directed at the Ukrainian people?
I don't watch Russian TV stations for obvious reasons, but I've got an aunt in St. Petersburg. She doesn't like watching them either. She prefers alternative sources of information. But if she happens to watch something, she says that it's propaganda, and even it's worse than during the Second World War, during Nazi propaganda.
Ah, okay. So I'm just curious as to what maybe the Ukrainian media has decided to say about Russia's actions, especially considering that there were some meetings that were supposed to be between Vladimir Putin's representatives and our country's representatives, the U.S. representatives, that did not seem to go well, according to our press. Have you heard anything about that, where some negotiation might have taken place?
What I've realized that if there's no meeting that is agreed on, I mean between the U.S. president and Russian president, that means that they haven't agreed on anything.
Okay, fair enough. So, is there a general sense that you're getting from your fellow countrymen? I mean, the president is telling you, yes, you know, be calm. And, you know, the media is going to tell you the story that, in most cases, will probably support the presidential position, as it does in our country, usually. But... Is there a general sense among the people that maybe, okay, we want to be calm, but we're already engaged here? I mean, what is the, you know, the word on the street, so to speak? What do you get from, you know, again, just your fellow countrymen?
Well, we try not to talk or think much about it, because... if you are getting into it too much, it disbalances you a lot. So the only probably sensible thing is to live your ordinary life and to plan your future. But if we talk about it we realized that it might happen and at any moment, because it all depends only on one person, and we all know who. And unfortunately, this person isn't very... So I think he's psychic or...
Psychotic.
Yeah, probably.
See, I want to interrupt here just to say that I know that some people might be saying to themselves, well, you know, you could have cut this down, but I don't cut down other people's words or intent. And we need to be fair to Allah here, because I'm interrupting this live as we're replaying it. We need to be extremely fair to her. I mean, what is this? English is her fifth language? And she's trying to be very careful about what she's saying. You know, even Amir speaks, you know, what, 5-6 languages? I don't know exactly how many, but I mean, I know for sure I'm probably going to lose my all my fingers counting them. So remember that English is not even close to a first language or used constantly. Indeed, we're going to find out later in this interview exactly what language is commonly used over there, despite what some alt media and, well, MSM will tell you here. In the West. But anyway, well, I'll just let the tape continue to roll. But try and have patience, as I did and as everybody should, with all of it. I mean, Amir is quite used to the Aussie version of English and has used it a great deal more. But Allah is very articulate, considering that I don't think English is one of those things she commonly uses. Anyway, so... There you go. I just want to make that comment in case people are going, why didn't he cut out some of the ums and ahs here? I edited none of this. It was recorded straight, and the only interruption is what you're hearing right now from me. So anyway, back to the uncut tape.
That's the word for that. So the situation is really dangerous, and I can remember... back 2014, it was spring 2014 when we were back in Donetsk, and which is now occupied by Russia, and we were told that there wouldn't be any war, and they were billboards everywhere with these words, there won't be any war. And then all of a sudden we were in this conflict with suffering from heavy shelling all around us.
Right.
And we had to leave. Not because of the shelling, but because of the sort of regime that was established there.
Well, Alla, just to be clear, something mm-hmm. that it seems as though the Western press does not understand at all is that territory was already taken effectively by, well, let's just call them Russian assets or allies, one way or the other. Territory's already been taken from the Ukraine. This idea from Ukraine, the idea that that we're waiting on some new invasion is actually false, because territory has already been taken. There have been many threats already made, and there has been land lost, literally. Already, is this a correct assessment by me?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, that's.
So
there's a new threat of losing some more territories, and probably worse than that. In the worst nightmare. Putin might want to occupy the whole Ukraine and put a government that is loyal to him.
Well, let me. That leads right to my next question, if you don't mind, Ala, which is, I have a supposition which I share with another analyst who is not typical, again, of U.S. press or media. that is, we feel as though the goal here may not be to militarily invade, although that is an option in Putin's mind. But I think the goal may actually be to replace the Ukrainian government as it stands with a fully sympathetic, although Ukrainian government, one that is entirely sympathetic and really under the control of Moscow. Is that the same thing that that you and others in your country believe as well?
I don't think that many people have the same opinion, but some of them do.
Well, do you feel as though there is a clear goal being set by Putin here to invade in a what shall we call it, conventional sense, to actually roll military forces in, that is not just a threat but something that you know, indeed will happen in the near future? Is that something that is generally thought of again over there, you think?
I don't know, because we've experienced like occupation already. Right. So the Crimea and part of eastern Ukraine. So that might happen. But again, some people and even me, so I'm into minds about it, think that that will be just exercising and trying to like scare the West and make the U.S. Give like proofs, any documents to Russia that Ukraine will not join NATO. Well, at least not very soon. And I think still, if Putin doesn't start a new invasion, I think that there's still a very big risk. Probably it's even much bigger risk at the next election. They will try to push their candidates who will be sympathetic and who will be loyal.
So through political action and political warfare, so to speak.
So it's also a very tentative like moment.
Right, but all of these options are realistic. But you have a sense that
100% realistic.
Right, but you have a sense that it could be a strategic ploy here that could just make it easier for a sympathetic government to be installed. Okay, and I don't disagree with that either. I think that that's very realistic as an outsider looking at this, and given the past behaviors with Georgia and with Crimea and with Belarus, it seems as though that would be a very a realistic scenario. And yeah, I can see how you see that. Now, you know, before I stop pressing you with many questions, the big one is this, because I every time I see reports from Ukraine, it is always foreign reporters, honestly, in either a small apartment or a hotel room, generally, telling us about what's happening. And generally speaking, all they've done is pushed the government lines to us and told us that, okay, the Ukrainian president said this, our president said that, Putin's statements are this, and they haven't given us any indication, really, of what it's like for you and your countrymen there. So if you wanted people to know something about what is happening currently to you and to the people in Ukraine right now, would there be anything that that you think needs to be known at this time, which is ahead of, obviously, any of the goals being reached or any new combat being had there, aside from what's already happened? Before any of that happens, I mean, is there anything that you think the world needs to know, basically?
Well, the, I think the world doesn't know much about what's happening in Ukraine, as I've got an idea that they don't want to watch news about Ukraine or such conflicts much, because they are tired already. So it's been so long.
So you think that
It's not the news. Probably it's the people. Who don't want to know.
Fair enough. Are there any negative things happening to people in Ukraine right now as a result of what's happening on the border? I don't know this at all. This is a completely unknown question to me. Are you having any problems, say, getting supplies, or are there issues with travel?
No, no, not at all. Everything is all right. It's like in any European country. We've got all the supplies. We've got power, water, supplies, everything. Mm. Everything you need.
Okay. Also, we had news in the past few days about a cyber attack on Ukraine. Was there any negative result to people there, or was it merely a disruption of the government? Or what is it that maybe you could tell us about that has not been reported elsewhere?
It hasn't affected ordinary people. At least it hasn't affected me or my colleagues or somebody I know. What I've read in the media that some departments have suffered that attack, and probably it wasn't a major attack, so we could.
No, I appreciate that. It's just they made a very big deal out of it here in the U.S.
But they are attacking all the time. It's not these days there are more of these attacks.
Ukraine has been under constant cyber attack since 2014, nonstop.
Right. Right. No, I just wanted to mark this because they've only started talking about this in the past couple of weeks at most here. And, you know, with that, I mean, I guess we should start talking to Amir about it, because he can put some of these other things in context. And I really appreciate you taking the time to do this with us, Alla. If you don't mind, stick around a little bit, because Amir, help me out. I may have missed some of this. You know, I don't know if we're going to get sold the same propaganda line that we got with Crimea, where, you know, effectively, here's the way it was sold in the U.S., I want you to understand, is that the Crimean people wanted to join the Russian Federation. Okay, this was the will of the people, according to the reports that we were receiving here, a lot of them. And it was a majority kind of decision. And this does make the average American say, well, if that's what the people wanted, that's what they wanted. And ignore what went on there. They haven't tried to sell this with Ukraine in general yet. But from what you know, having lived there, I imagine your whole life, right?
Since I
was. So my question here is that in any way something that is a major thing among a lot of people in Ukraine, or are they against or for the idea of Russian involvement with Ukraine? Does Ukraine want to remain independent in general as far as regular people go?
It depends on what age group we are talking about. If they are elderly people who spent most of their young life in the USSR, so probably they have such nostalgia, and they would either wouldn't mind joining Russia again, because we know that Putin wants to reunite at least some of the republics and to restore the USSR. Some of them really are really eager to do that. If we talk about younger generations, who, like me, I was born in the USSR. I can remember my childhood, my youth in the USSR. But then when Ukraine became independent, I accepted that as a normal course of events. And people who are younger than me would never think of joining Russia, because they don't see any sense. They don't have that feeling of nostalgia about the USSR, because they don't realize what it is like to live in the USSR.
Okay, so maybe like if people are 50 years or older, some of them might want to rejoin the USSR because they remember that nicely. Somebody who's younger than that, in your age group, say, the next stage going younger, say from 30 to 50, somewhere in there, they might remember the USSR, but not really want to return to it. And then you're saying people that are even younger than that would have no memory of it and no attachment to it, and probably just want to keep things the way it is. Is that about what you're saying?
Yeah, I think the majority wouldn't like to join Russia. They would rather join the EU because it's not only territorially, but also historically, we might be closer to the countries in the EU than to Russia.
Like a country like Poland, say.
Yeah, like Poland and other nearby countries.
Well, Germany's not far away, right?
Well, I think she means Czechoslovakia and maybe even the former Yugoslavia. Balkans.
Yugoslavia, that's right.
Okay. Yeah, the Slavic peoples.
That makes more sense. Okay. Yeah. Okay, no, I'm just trying to parse out what she's saying altogether and be clear about it. Okay, so that actually makes a lot of sense to me. Emir, you know, again, I don't know what perspective, Allah may have on this, but curious question I want to give to both of you, and maybe you could start and have Allah compliment you on this. the NATO circumstance, and they discuss it here, like, oh, well, what about the possibility of Ukraine joining? Well, can't right now because there is an active conflict, and that's part of the problem. But I'm curious about what, you know, generally Ukrainians feel about this idea of, well, would there be a possibility in the future of Ukraine joining NATO, which is clearly a serious sore spot with Putin. But then again, I'm not sure that NATO is collectively altogether willing to welcome them. But it's yet another thing to consider whether the nation itself, or the people, I should say, in that nation might have that desire to do it. So maybe you could, both of you actually, starting with Amir, help me to understand this part of it. And because I get the sense that Ukraine, in general, the people anyway, would not mind becoming either part of the EU or NATO, something in that direction, almost anything but rejoining the Russian Federation, outside of what Alice said regarding, you know, maybe there's some older people that might have nostalgia for the USSR here. But other than that, not so much. I mean, am I reading this wrong, Amir, or what?
No, it's that take on it is pretty much, well, I can't disagree with it. And it's interesting, you know, in the media normally when they do the demographic split for pro-Soviet, non-Soviet, they do it geographically. Or East Ukraine is all pro-Russian, West Ukraine is all pro-Ukrainian. But as Arla pointed out, it's maybe more demographic. It's becoming more that way, just interestingly. But with the NATO thing, Putin is sometimes defined as a very shrewd and clever statesman, and you know, in some respects he is, okay, but in a lot of respects he's not, because if he doesn't want Ukraine to join NATO, he's doing, as we have stated this, I have stated this before, he's doing everything that's the opposite. He's forcing Ukraine into a position where there is no other option. It needs the protection of NATO. And look, historically, if you look at it historically, right, the way it's portrayed in a lot of alt media is poor Russia. You know, NATO's encroaching on its borders because, Secretary of State James Baker promised Gorbachev they wouldn't do that. Well, James Baker couldn't make that promise. He doesn't control... The Secretary of State can't dictate to NATO. So that whole concept is ridiculous. All right, politicians say things to each other just to get results, right? But all the alt media that says, Ukraine should stay out of NATO to provoke Russia, well... You know, because of the promises and the encroachment on the borders, well, Russia's borders have never been violated by NATO or any of, or by Ukraine. But Russia has violated many borders: Czechoslovakia 1968, Poland, Hungary 1956. Mm-hmm. All the former Eastern Bloc states were forced into the Warsaw Pact but didn't want to be in it. Right, Yugoslavia, luckily my home country, where my ancestors came from, was the only one to break free and successfully stay out of the Warsaw Pact. But with Ukrainians who don't have a bad attitude towards Ukraine, the way I see it for the almost 7 years I've been here, they would be in agreement with getting some NATO protection. But obviously the ones who are more, you know, like Alice said, the older generation and that, they don't want the Americans in here. Because of the, you know, I think all things being said, more people are probably for Ukraine than against it. And also just the history, like I mentioned, of, you know, Russia not respecting anyone around it and violating these countries whenever it wants, right, whether it be the USSR or the former Russian Empire, what choice has Ukraine got? You know, and it's another thing I'll just quickly say. A lot of the alt media are anti-imperialist. They say they're anti-imperialist and, you know, they don't want all the, you know, the CIA overthrowing governments everywhere. And everything's a color revolution to them. But that's ridiculous. Mm. Not everything's a color revolution. That's implying that here the Ukrainians were too stupid to rise up against a government they didn't want and that they need the CIA to do that for them. Well, that's that's just an insult to Ukrainians, right? They just don't want... The simple thing is they don't want Russia anymore, right? All the more in the 30s, they killed up to 9 million of them. And past history with the suppression of the language and the culture and the reversing of history. Putin writing that speech a while back, he stole the history. Mm-hmm. You know, he reversed it. He's saying, he's making out Russia is the center of Eastern Slavic civilization and Kiev is like a suburb. It's the other way around. Right. Kiev is the center and Moscow is the suburb. So technically, Russia belongs to Ukraine. Ukraine doesn't belong to Russia, but yeah. Anyway, with NATO, yes, we need NATO protection. As a Westerner who, and I'll just, again, just give another 30 seconds. When NATO bombed Yugoslavia, Serbia in 1999, I hated them, right? Because I've got a Serbian relatives who lived in Belgrade, right? Like primarily my grandmother and some uncles and cousins, and they could have all died in that bombing, right? So I thought NATO was the worst thing on the planet back then, but now, you know what? NATO's not that bad. Look, it was maybe misused in that context back then, right, with Yugoslavia. We won't get into that because that's a sore point with me. But when it comes to Ukraine, you know what? Look, as someone who didn't like NATO, you know, 10, 20 years ago, now it's the other way around. Look, NATO might be the lesser of two evils, but it's one that hasn't destroyed its partners, countries like the Warsaw Pact did. They were all invasions. None of those countries wanted to be in the Warsaw Pact. So, yeah, we need NATO.
Right. And so, as I go back to Allah really quickly, there's something to be said about this history here, which, again, is ignored by Western media. The slaughter of so many Ukrainians at the hands of effectively what is resurrected through this Russian Federation, and it's a long history. I would think that those who are older, it seems almost strange to me that those who are older might not recall this. But this in general would make just common sense that Ukraine is not wanting to be welcomed into the Russian Federation here. It's about the will of the people to me. You know, as Amir, you just pointed out, with a lot of other alt media people, they claim to be, anti-imperialist. I am. And I'll tell you something, I figure that the will of the people should be the thing that if there's going to be American assets, if there's going to be NATO assets involved, this should be what we're in support of, is the will of the people to maintain things, to assist them. Absolutely, I think if you're going to use it for anything, I would prefer that the U.S. kept itself out of most things. But since we don't, the best use of any of this power that we amass constantly by financing it fully as we do would be to support people who wish to maintain their independence from other federations, empires, even if we are indeed also an empire, which is something I am not pleased with. But if you're going to wield military power, I feel as though it's best used by assisting those who wish to establish and maintain and survive their own independence. So it's kind of weird to me that there's a whole history here. Would you like to say anything about the history, the literal murder of many Ukrainians at the hands of basically what Vladimir Putin is trying to welcome back in?
There's a long history, and it's a painful part of the Ukrainian history when Russia started controlling Ukraine, when it became weak because of Tatar-Mongol invasion back in the 12th, 13th, and later centuries, when Ukrainians were all independent, they were farmers, they had their land, and they didn't have masters. But as soon as Russia started controlling Ukraine, so there appeared like slaves, so who had to work for their masters. So that's where that painful point starts.
That's the starting point, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it continued on, from my understanding, you know, and it's a very long history, as you said. Mm-hmm. So it seems almost strange to me that anyone in Ukraine would be wanting to welcome back who was a historical oppressor. You know, and that's a point that that you made, Amir, several times.
A lot of people, like on the alt media, say that Ukraine isn't a country. It was only established when the USSR, was established, which is just propaganda. Ukraine had one of the first constitutions in the world. It was called the Constitution of Prilep Orlik, 1703. So that's even before the USA. It was like a Cossack Hetmanate back then. It wasn't, you know, actually called Ukraine, but they spoke what is today called Ukrainian language, and they were Ukrainians. And also, tell them about how you know how in the media they say that Russian propaganda that Eastern Ukraine's always been Russian, when 100 years ago when the Bolsheviks took over, the all the way to the River Don was ethnic Ukrainian land. And the Bolsheviks ethnically cleansed it and stole it all from Ukraine.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. Just like 100 years ago, Crimea was 90% Tatar. There's hardly any Russians there, hardly any Ukrainians there either. But they, the Tatars don't want to be part of Russia. They want to be part of Ukraine, but you never hear them mentioned by anyone,
right,
you know, in that rigged referendum, you know, which was, you know, supposedly 90% for, which is very suspect. You know, anything 90% for in an election is probably means it's rigged.
Right.
But all things being even, it's probably like a 50-50 split in Crimea, honestly.
Hmm.
You know, if you had a real referendum, it wouldn't be 90%.
Well, I was given to understand back then, as I told you, I stand corrected on a lot of the things that I was covering back then when it came to Crimea, but... my understanding was that also they actually spoke Russian a lot in Crimea, but I've been given to understand that was not necessarily, you know, up to that 90% level like the referendum represented later, you know. And although people in Ukraine might have the ability to understand Russian, it's only a situational thing. It's not a matter of their cultural history. It's just that, well, you know, after a while, you have to learn how to communicate with, Allah put it, you know, your masters. So
that's a legacy of the Ukrainian language being just outlawed on and off by the Russian Empire and the Soviet Union.
There you go.
Right. So we speak Russian here, right? No one. Hardly anyone you'll hear speaking Ukrainian in public, except in the stores and stuff now. But the other week, I heard all the other alt media outlets who are supposedly doing good journalism saying, how Russian is banned in Ukraine. It's not. We went to a restaurant last week for St. Ivan's Day, and the waitress was speaking Russian to us, not Ukrainian. Right, it's just complete and utter a hogwash that Russian is banned here. But yes, it's still a common language here. Even Isla speaks it, and she's she loves her country. She's a Ukrainian nationalist. But that Russian is not banned. That's propaganda. It only has to be used in government jobs now. So if you work for the government, you have to do all the paperwork in Ukrainian. That's it. That's the only time you got to, and in the, you're supposed to use it in the stores now too. There's a law that says you got to speak Ukrainian in the stores, but hardly anyone does here. Everyone still speaks Russian, right? So it's not like, you know, the alt media is making out, you know, Grey Zone and mother of all talk shows and all those other Russian propagandists. Oh, yeah, Russian's been banned, you know. The Russians are being oppressed. The Russian speakers are being oppressed. They're not. Right. And in Crimea, because of the Soviet legacy, in that era, they populated the whole peninsula with more Slavic speakers, you know, Russians, Ukrainians, Belarusians, whatever. And in the USSR, the official language was Russian, so... the Russian is spoken, but that's neither here nor there. It's just the language. It's a Slavic language, but as I pointed out to you before in a previous podcast, it's not. They're separate languages. They're not dialects. The Ukrainian is not Russian. They're very distinct Slavic languages.
No, fair enough. And as I told you then, I am not given to understand the difference because it's very difficult.
Just quickly again to reiterate for the listeners, just the basics, yes and no in Russian, da, нет, right? In Ukrainian, it's two totally different words, tak and ni. Yes, tak, ni, no. You know, goodbye in Russian is до свидания, in Ukrainian is до побачення. Two different words, and this is just the basics. So, you know, these alt media propagandists who are saying, you know, that Ukraine has always been under the Russian fold. No, they haven't. They're culturally a different Slavic group, ethno-cultural group. You know, that they don't want Russia anymore. That's the impression I get here.
Right. Well, in Russian, thank you is spasibo. Right?
Yes.
And what is it in Ukrainian?
In Ukrainian, it's Dyakuyu.
Yeah, see, that's...
So two different words.
Entirely different. Yeah, no, I was just pointing it out. It's just another common phrase. Okay. No, but see, here's the thing. You won't get that from anybody. It makes it sound like it's a gradient difference. You know, and it's not. You know, we're not looking at Americans versus Canadians here.
It's not a dialectical difference. It's way more than that. Yeah,
right.
As someone who speaks, Serbo-Croatian in the former Yugoslavia, the Slovenian and Macedonian were separate languages, not dialects. But Bosnian, Croatian, Serbian, Montenegrin, we all speak the same language. They're not. Some will tell you they're dialects, right? But really, it's the difference between English. You know, Australian English and American English, there's hardly any.
It's a regional difference when you get into it.
But Ukrainian, the language is a separate Slavic language, and the first one, unlike Vladimir Putin in his essay trying to make out Russian was the mother tongue, it's not. It's the other way around. Russian is like a cousin language of Ukrainian that came later, because in the ancient Kievan Rus, there's graffiti on some old archaeological ruins, and that graffiti, the archaeologists worked out, was the equivalent of what is today modern-day Ukrainian, not Russian. That's what they spoke in Kievan Rus.
Right.
Yeah. So we're the mother country. Russia belongs to us in Ukraine, not the other way around.
Right. Fair enough.
Da, so.
Allah, that sounds right, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. No, I just want to make sure here. You know, I'm not trying to question you, Amir. It's just a matter of I'd like to hear from her as well.
Maybe we'll let Arla talk now for a bit because
she's probably going to get going because she had to work today. So I really appreciate you taking the time after you've done your work to sit down and talk to me about this. It's much appreciated, and it's a unique report that I assure you. We're not getting over here, okay? Just even the few questions I've been able to ask you, I'm not hearing this perspective. So, you know, again, I don't mean for you to conflict with anything Amir said, but if there's anything you want to correct there, go ahead. Please do. But if not, you know, before I let you go, again, maybe you're thinking about there's something that... should be reported here that you'd like people to know about what is happening currently, so that we can have at least one place where a Ukrainian voice is actually heard. Okay. So, you know, what else would you like to tell anybody about what's happening currently and how you feel about it? You know, what you if you have a prediction for what you think is going to happen, you know, in the near future, please tell us that. Whatever it is you want to add here, you're free to go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I completely agree with everything that Emir said, and probably the only thing that I would like to add that so starting from 2014, starting from the beginning of the war, it's not a conflict, it's a proper war. Well, at least that's what I think. We have become, or we are becoming more and more distant from Russia.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't. Back in 2014, people didn't think much of joining the NATO because we didn't have any need.
Alochka, I remember back then we even thought Putin was a good doing stuff against the West just to keep the balance. But now we don't like him at all. Yeah, he's out of favor.
Well, was there any big change, Ala, when President Zelensky came in?
Probably it's not with Zelensky. Again, these years of war make us want to join the EU and NATO and to make to do everything possible to be distant from Russia, right, and to have nothing common with them.
Okay, so that didn't begin with Zelensky. It just kind of took hold over time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, fair enough.
Before 2014, Chuck, a lot of people here in Ukraine, even ones like Ala, didn't have a problem with Russia and Vladimir Putin, given the past history, but even to the point of thinking, oh, he's good pushing back against the West kind of thing, because, you know, Ukraine was kind of being used as a pawn in the past and whatever. Right. Now, no one likes him. No one wants to have anything to do with him in Russia. So he's burnt up any capital he had. Back then, it might have been over 50% of people thought he was okay. Now here, it'd be lucky to be 10%, 20%, you know, mate. You know, that it's he has done everything the opposite of what the outcomes he actually wants. He's alienated the Ukrainians. Instead of respecting them, he's been cruel and belligerent to them. So, and he knows they can't join NATO, right? Like, Ukraine cannot join NATO because its borders are unstable.
Right.
That's in the NATO charter. So he's saying he wants in writing, like Ala mentioned earlier, that, you know, trying to blackmail the West into giving him in writing that Ukraine can't join NATO. But they know that Ukraine can't, and neither can Georgia, because he did that on purpose with the starting the wars to keep Ukraine out. That's where he probably did a good, you know, if you call that a master stroke. But look, alienating his Ukrainian brothers, as the Russians like to say, they've blown it.
Yeah,
I don't want Russia.
That's why I analyzed that on Thursday, and we talked about Georgia and the operation there, which is, you know, from Vladimir Putin's perspective, very successful. I feel as though the Belarusian situation has also been a success for what it was he attempted to accomplish.
See, with Belarus, the Union State has now been solidified. Before that problem in Belarus, Lukashenko never properly ratified that Union Treaty between Russia and Belarus.
Right.
Now he has. So Belarus is basically a vassal of Russia now. You see, that here, Belarus is called Belarusia, right? But Russia is Rossiya. right? But I jokingly say Belarus is Belarusia now, not Russia,
right?
Because it's they're a vassal, yeah, which anyone who knows the difference between a language would probably get. Yeah. But also now Armenia, the president stepped down, I think, yesterday or the other day. So the Russians are probably going to get their man into the Armenian positions as well.
Well, Vladimir Putin, so
Kazakhstan.
Yeah, Vladimir Putin, if nothing else, will multitask, if you know what I'm saying. It's not as though he's got one operation at a time going, as any good intelligence commander would. You run multiple operations, and certainly you can use one to play off of the other, one to distract from the other. So one of the questions I wasn't clear with Allah, maybe you could clarify a little bit, Amir. And Allah, if you want to go, I understand, because you could be very tired after working. Totally get it. But just a little clarification here, because I asked about the military exercises that have been described to us. I'm not super clear as to whether the Ukrainians see this as anything different than just what I'm describing here, which is just military operation. Yeah. Please.
Well, when Ala was explaining it, she was saying that, along Belarus there's been more activity, and that falls into line with what those people you know over there said. I think you and Larry might have discussed it in that podcast earlier, last week.
Yeah, I'm friendly with a couple of people. Yeah, just one second. I'm friendly with a couple of people over there, just average citizens, honestly, who effectively told me exactly that. That they were a little nervous because there is a lot of extra activity there that is not looking like it's being advertised. They don't want to come on air. They don't want to talk to me publicly about it. They're worried for doing that.
Yeah, because they'll get busted and put into jail and beat up. It's really repressive there now.
Right.
That's their worry.
Yes, so you can understand that, but also I was just curious if the Ukrainian idea of what's going on to the north of them is any different. And one other thing, too, although it is not ethnically, historically, Eastern Ukraine is, basically Russia, this kind of thing that Putin is putting forward, we are being shown a map where there is a chunk, anyway, of what looks like the southeastern portion of Ukraine, which is under the control, apparently, of Russian sympathizers.
Novorossiya. Ala, you can explain it, that Novorossiya.
Well, that's his dream, Putin's dream, because he needs all these southern regions
to join
them with the Crimea, as the Crimea suffers from the lack of water since the occupation. So that Putin's dream.
Okay, but just to let you know, Western news outlets are basically showing part of what I understand to be Ukraine as effectively under the control of Russia already.
Okay. Well, how far does that map they're showing, does it show the control of the Russian bit going almost to Crimea or only halfway there? Can you remember?
It shows almost to Crimea, yeah.
Oh, okay, that's Novorossiya, because the DNR stops just before Mariupol, which is about halfway to Crimea from Russia, roughly. So what they're showing is an old project of the Russian Empire called Novorossiya, New Russia, Russia, Russia.
Okay.
And that is something that they would like to restore, which was never successfully done during the Russian Empire, because they just took over the whole country. But so if he can do that, he can also maybe join up with Moldova and that Transnistria Republic that is over on the western side, Prednistrova. So it's claimed there's 100, 120,000 troops on the border. That's not enough to take over all of Ukraine. Kiev's like 3 to 4 million people. They'd need 100,000 just to occupy Kiev. So if this happens, I think it might be just an operation to do something like this Novorossiya project or encircle Kiev and, it threatened the Ukrainian government and scare the bejesus out of them and get them to sign some agreements. But also, Kiev is vulnerable. It's within artillery shelling range from Belarus.
That's the other question I had, actually, is because these operations, these exercises, again in air quotes, I'm thinking about the vulnerability of anything in the northern. I don't know what to call it, the northern half of the country, really, from that strategic position.
Yeah. If they're having an exercise, exercises in Belarus, why isn't it all over Belarus? Why just at the border? That's suspect. Yeah. That's a worry, actually. That's
exactly what my thinking was, but nobody's saying it, you understand? I'm looking at this map myself, right, trying to get a sense of what's happening. Because if I just went with the U.S. reports, I would not even be thinking about any of this. That's just an operation. this is normal stuff like we do all over the place. And, yeah, we do stuff like this all over the place. But, anyway, so, Amir, now that you've sat and gone through all this with me, I really appreciate it, but... let's get to, is there anything that you feel as though we need to add to this this recording?
Not that I can think of offhand. We've probably covered everything. All I'll say is, look, that the Western, I don't really, haven't seen much of the mainstream media, but the alt media, which I do monitor because a lot of them are anti-Ukrainian and very pro-Russian,
right.
It's ridiculous the things they're saying. That they're all, they claim to be anti-imperialist, but they're dictating that Ukraine should do this and not join NATO, and they're dictating just like imperialists, which is weird, they claim to be anti-imperialist. There's a lot of negative propaganda about Ukraine, which is, and they're making out that Russia's the victim, that it seems borders are being encroached on by NATO. Well, its borders will not be violated. No one wants to invade Russia. We just want Russia to leave us alone.
Right.
Yeah, that's it.
The argument, see, here's where the problem is. The argument that Russia is sort of encircled by NATO is valid.
Yeah.
But that's as far as it goes. These guys take it to another extreme where it's like, as if they're being militarily contained by this. That's not the case. I mean, strategically, in a way, yes, it does suppress the idea that, something like what is happening to Ukraine right now should not...
Yeah, Ukraine is surrounded by Russia, but no one mentions that. Forget Russia being surrounded by NATO.
That was my next point.
Yeah.
That was, if you look at the map yourself, say, wait a minute, Ukraine is almost looking like it's getting ready to be swallowed on the map by Russia.
Yeah, but they've got the threat from the south, from Crimea, the east, with the eastern republics, now Belarus to the north, and even to the west, Moldova, Transnistria.
Right.
There's a Russian base there too, army base there. And they've effectively taken over the entire Azov Sea in violation of a late 2003, I think it was. Sorry, I was mixing it up with another treaty. 2003 treaty on the cooperation and sharing of the Azov Sea, which has been violated by Russia. They've blocked the Kerch Strait, so Ukrainian shipping cannot access ports in the Azov Sea anymore. So they've violated that treaty, but that's never mentioned. It's always poor Russia, NATO's encroaching. But NATO's not there to attack Russia. It's there to defend from Russia.
Right.
The Baltic states, as soon as the USSR broke up, bang, they went into NATO, and it's understandable because they were occupied, and same with Poland and the other countries.
Yeah.
See, NATO doesn't canvass countries to join them. Countries ask to join NATO. It's the other way around from what seems to be being made out.
Right.
And like I've said before, Russia's forced Ukraine's hand as someone who's just, you know, an outsider who lives here now, that they really have been forced into a position where they can do nothing else but seek some form of protection from Western Europe. And they'll never get into NATO. It'll be like a partnership agreement. But right. Maybe I'd like to see some Sweden and Finland join NATO. That'd give Russia another worry.
That is true. And, you know, the other thing to consider here is that I you know, the attitude, again, from the alt media and the mainstream media here is that this can only go so far anyway. And I fail to see the logic there, because it appears to me as though if he is unchecked, there would be no qualms that Putin would have about, you know, attempting to take back the entire what we used to call the Eastern Bloc, which would include places like Poland. And I don't think any of these people are thinking this far ahead. It appears to me as though that would be the obvious strategy that is in play here. But I don't know. Again, our analysts here don't seem to agree with me. Yeah, go ahead.
As you know, you and Larry discussed last week, this is an ongoing hybrid war that's been, you know, happening for, you know, 8-odd years now, and it'll keep going. Right. That's why I don't think it'll be a complete and utter invasion. It'll be another step in this ongoing process of restoring the old Russian Empire.
Right.
For Tsar Putin, the Tsar of all the Russias, Great Russia, White Russia, and Little Russia, which is the derogatory name for Ukraine. Don't ever call Ukraine Little Russia to other Ukrainians.
Oh, no. Look, I'm not calling it that.
Yeah, I was making a joke, actually. He wants influence here in the former space that they used to dominate. And, you know, Russia doesn't like being violated, but it won't respect other countries' borders who are smaller. It's a huge country. Why do they need more territory?
Listen, I still get corrected. I know it's a sore spot for you, but I still get corrected by people when I use the word Yugoslavia. No, that doesn't exist. It did. And does.
The joke was that Yugoslavia failed because there were no Yugoslavs. You know, there was just Serbians and Bosnians and Croats and whatever.
Yeah.
But no, Chuck, I call myself Yugoslav. The nationalists who call themselves Serbs and Croats, they were the ones who destroyed the country. Well, my father even used to call himself Yugoslav, my late father, so... don't worry about the people who correct you. The political Yugoslavia is gone, right? But the geographic Yugoslavia exists, because Yugoslavia just means South Slav, land of the Yug is South. So
right.
Yugoslavia, South Slavs, and that includes Bulgaria. So you can counter them and go, well, the geographical Yugoslavia does still exist, the South Slavs.
Well, and that's usually what I'm talking about, is the geographical area. And also I know that, I'm aware of Serbia, Croatia, and all that, but I'm also aware that there is a region there that shares a heritage as to whether it was balkanized and destroyed from within and without. That is yet another issue, but the fact is that there is still this this place that does exist geographically, as you said. So
there's two Yugoslavias, the political and the geographical.
Right. Fair enough. But I'm just saying that, you know, when the attitude is taken that, well, Ukraine, you know, is just kind of supposed to go back into the Russian Federation. I don't understand that. Yeah. Based on the will of the people. See, to me, this is what it's about. If Ukrainians generally said, look, we want to be part of the Russian Federation, I would say, let them, if that's what they want. I mean, and we should not interfere, nor should anyone. You know,
the observation I made out when I first came here was that those people just missed the old Soviet Union, the way Allah described the older generation.
Yeah.
They lament about the Soviet Union. But they'll eventually, you know, be gone, and the younger people who don't want that part of that past anymore will just carry on, and Ukraine will be free. See, when I came here, I thought these guys have got their country back, and they're not going to give it up this time.
Right.
They finally got their country back after 1,000 years under the Russian jackboot. And they will not give it up this time. They've got the means to hang on and fight, and and they've got guts. If Russia tries something, it will suffer heavy losses, I think.
Well, see, that's that was my final question here, because I'm going to let you guys go, because you've given me more than an hour here, and I really appreciate it, both of you. But the last question really was, I heard these statements that came from your president, actually, and I was wondering how real they were, or was it just political saber-rattling when he basically said what you just said, which is, look, if you come in here, we are going to give you a fight, and the Russians will take losses.
Yeah, Ala, you can explain it. Titi Mojic.
Yeah. the thing that Russia will come across is a severe
resistance,
yeah, and we will fight hard.
But there they will. They're tough, and they've got courage. You know, unlike the Georgians who fell apart. And let's not forget, for the Russia, there's people that are favourable towards Russia and say Ukraine will fall in a week. Yeah, it might happen like that, but there'll be an insurgency that will never end. But let's not forget, it took the Great Russian Bear 15 years and two wars to subdue tiny little Chechnya, and even then, Putin had to bribe Kadyrov with billions in aid to end the stalemate. So, yeah. Ukraine will stand. It will. There'll be a lot of death and a lot of destruction. We'll lose our home for the second time, but Ukrainians will.
In the end, that will lead to end of Russia. It will be not just the end of Vladimir Putin. It will be the end of Russia.
It'll be a whole new world. It'll be like what 9/11 was to the world. It'll be a different world if that happens.
Fair enough. I will say this just here at the end. My hopes, my desires for this, because a lot of people want to insert their own ideas, so why don't I take a turn? I truly hope that this can be resolved without bloodshed, without loss of the control of a nation among a people that deserve to control their own destiny. And I really, truly hope that it can be accomplished without the loss of life, without bloodshed, without any of this. I would like to see all of this resolved peacefully, but
yes.
I am not in control. So my prayer is more that that no one will have to die for this to go the right way, and that it will go the right way. And I truly hope that the two of you are safe, but also all of your neighbors, your friends, your fellow countrymen. I don't want to see anybody. So that ends the pre-recorded section of the Ocelli Effect tonight. I'm going to take a little break here and come back with, my final thoughts maybe on what's going on over there, plus some other news. So stick around. We'll continue after this.
Ocelli.com.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold. Silver. The stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks by Larry Hancock.
Secret wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks. Larry Hancock. For more information, go to larry-hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at amazon.com in digital or physical form.
Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, he knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapons. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination book into her claims?
Go to amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
Revelation through conversation.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're listening to The Ocelli Effect at Ocelli.com.
So normally I would say second hour, but we're deep into the second hour here on the Ocelli Effect. So let's just get to some of the news of interest out there in the world. First of all, tailing on with the discussion that I had with Amir and Allah in the first hour and a half or so of the show. Here we go. CBS News published today an interesting article, apparently around 2:30 or so Eastern, maybe. Standard time, they got, you know, all of their wonderful corporate media stuff out there doing the bidding of the establishment as per usual. And what do we got? This is the headline. If not a full-scale invasion, what might a Russian attack on Ukraine look like? Question mark. We've seen it before. Okay. there's issues with this right away. As I tried to point out on the Thursday show with Larry Hancock, this is in motion. And I also talked about this with Amir and Allah. You know, an attack, like, it isn't already in progress. Like, it hasn't been a continuous situation. Okay, well, let's go to the MSN propaganda and see what it is they have to say. And it reads as follows. Kiev, Ukraine. The U.S. government's warning that Russia could launch a cyber attack targeting America's critical infrastructure. Okay, you catching this? Let's go back. The U.S. government's warning that Russia could launch a cyber attack targeting America's critical infrastructure likely surprised very few Ukrainians. CBS News senior foreign correspondent Holly Williams and her team have reported on Russia's aggression in Ukraine in its many forms since Vladimir Putin's forces last invaded in 2014. Now, you see how they're parsing this out. First of all, planting the idea that Russia will launch a cyber attack against the U.S. over the Ukraine. They are tailing on to, dovetailing with, of course I'm pulling away from the article, they are dovetailing on with the reports earlier this week, or within the past 10 days or so, regarding the attack on Ukraine, which I asked them about. And they basically, you know, if you listen to Alla and Amir there, they'll tell you that this has been a continuous process, much like this, well, he last invaded in 2014. He didn't last invade in 2014. He's been invading since 2014. He's been cyber attacking Ukraine since 2014. And guess what? The attempts to do the same here in the U.S. have been continuous. But are they going to make it like it's some, you know, brand new breaking news? Possibly. So keep your eyes peeled, so to speak, right? Anyway, Russia's, back to the article, by the way, Russia's buildup of about 100,000 troops around Ukraine's eastern border has fueled fear of a full-scale invasion, stressing their unity. The U.S. and its European allies have issued increasingly stark warnings that any Russian forces crossing the border would bring, quote, massive, end quote, severe, end quote, consequences for Putin's government. Pull away from the article again. We've been treated to this idea that there will be these tremendous sanctions and all that. And, of course, Joe there on the podium telling us different things. Hanging out doing his pressers. Jen Psaki trying to tell us a story. Certainly the MSM's arms wrapping themselves around this story. Will there be a response? Well, there could be severe consequences. And alerting, or at least putting on alert, 8,000 troops when you know there's 100,000 on the border. Mathematically, does that make any sort of sense? No. It's either that a great deal of the strategy is, or the pieces in motion for the strategy, I should say, have been hidden, or, guess what, are not in motion. Now, is there a consideration from NATO itself, excuse my coughing, is there a consideration from NATO itself as to what's going to go on? Is there a consideration from the various European allies who will be concerned about the aggression of one of their neighbors? I is it even possible to parse it out based on what it is we're being fed through the Pentagon and the Biden administration at this point? I leave it as an open question. Anyway, back to the article just briefly, and I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I will post it in the chat room at Ocelli.com, as well as in the show notes for the podcast if you're catching this later. So by all means, follow up and read it for yourself. But these are all things which must be considered. And even if this is no more than, a surface level propaganda, pay attention to it, because I believe that, as per usual, a great deal of the truth may be revealed by decoding what is being put forth in advance of the major actions that could indeed take place in the next few days, weeks, months. Anyway, Russia's buildup of about 100,000 troops. Okay, I already read that part. Back to it. But back to the article. But Williams reporting on the war that has simmered quietly for 7 years on the fault line between Russia and the Democratic West shows Putin's tactics are often obscured. The question for Ukrainians now is not just if Russia will attack, but how. Anyway, but how, but when will it actually stop instead of start is really the reality. I guess we'll have to stay tuned and do our best to track what's actually happening, and I intend to do so on the show, so let's see. Again, Putin's not a good guy, although I'm already being pushed back against by some people who are like, I don't understand you guys, where, you know, you think Putin's a bad guy. Look, he's adversarial. His agenda is not ours. It's not part of the mainstream agenda, nor is it part of the goodly agenda of the people here. This is not our buddy. I know RT tells you it is, but yeah, no. Anyway, let's go to some other stuff, because there is other stuff happening. And I was thinking about taking another break before I get into it, because I want to separate the Ukraine story from the rest of what's going on. But I urge people to go back and take a listen to the analysis that Larry Hancock and I went through this past Thursday. I think, and by the way, it was meant to be coupled with this recording today, but I couldn't get this recording until today with the Mir and Allah. So, you know, put the two things together, you have the intention of the discussion. Although I really did wish that Larry could have been there to ask some other questions. They might have been a lot more relevant to the reality. He might have been able to ask some key questions. But, you know, I take from it the conclusion of that discussion. I take very seriously that the attitude of Ukrainians who are of a nationalist orientation, who wish to remain Ukrainian above all else and are not interested in joining the Russian Federation, I think they are taking the attitude of individuals who wish to defend what they feel is their collective sovereignty, let's call it. And I appreciate that, and the statement that Russia indeed may be destroying itself by opening themselves up to this this conflict, and that the Ukrainians will not go down without a intense fight. If there were a conventional invasion, the Russians would definitely get a lot more than the proverbial bloody nose out of it, and at least the spirit of the Ukrainians would be to not only create the backlash that could indeed destroy this attempt to take their ancestral place on the map, but also the punishment might reach far back and up and backlash to the Russian Federation and punish Putin directly. Personally, I gotta tell you that I don't know where to come down on this, except to say that I truly with all of my heart wish that that these people did not have to die in order to preserve their freedom as they see fit. And I hope that that doesn't have to come to a conventional and bloody thing that the world will have to witness, although it might just ignore it. And I hope that's not the case either. And I hope they don't tell you the very shallow and pedestrian sort of narrative as the supreme story here. Here comes the U.S. They've done a good thing. Everything's fine. We pushed back on Putin. Or there was a deal cut and Putin got some of what he wanted, and so on and so forth. And so goes diplomacy. And, you know, the pawns, so to speak, here are people that may indeed just wanted to maintain their own personal identities. So, yeah, I'm going to take a really short break here and then pivot to some other news stories. So stick around. The Ocelli Effect will continue just after I get my reading material together here. On this Tuesday night, we'll finish it out. Stick around.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough.
Maybe you're thinking about getting started.
WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Uncle, I'll bet you remember the time when Benjamin Fulford said that the Asian Secret Society was going to dispatch ninjas to take out the Illuminati to change the entire world for the better.
That is never gonna happen. It never did.
It never did it?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, because there's a lot of false promises.
Fools? I can't say them.
We better not say and be polite, but there are no false promises at the Ocelli.com radio network.
That's exactly it. It's truth, the point, right to the point. And this is what I like. Straight to the point.
Ocelli.
Ocelli.com.
Listen now.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks. Larry Hancock. For more information, go to larry-hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at amazon.com in digital or physical form.
Now is a very good time to make a contribution at Ocelli.com by hitting the donate button in the upper right-hand corner of the website if you're on PC. Or, you know what, you can find that link somewhere and maybe even hit up the Patreon, whatever. All of it counts, and believe it or not, it is sometimes a struggle. And as we get ready to go into 2021, the struggles seem to be getting a little tighter than usual. So,
Ocelli.com.
So this is the third segment of the Ocelli Effect tonight, but a little unusual cut on this. I don't know. Hopefully you guys are enjoying the coverage and the alternative information that is available here in this program tonight. But, man, it is more of a deprogram when we compare it to what you're getting elsewhere. Okay. So this news story was sent to me by a listener earlier today. It was published today, and it's interesting because it's on the iHeart media page. So I'll read a little bit from this and also include the link with the podcast notes tonight and try and drop it right now, actually, as I speak, into the Ocelli.com chat room, which we do have a live chat. You know, you can join in there anytime you like if you go over to Listen Live page at Ocelli.com. And we do roll back the old chats as well. But this was sent to me from listener Ed. And quite frankly, I was a little stunned by the headline, but let's get to it. On iHeart, on the iHeart.com page, okay? Dying man removed from heart transplant list because he's not vaccinated. This looks like it was written by Bill Gallucci, I guess. I don't know. You know, his name is barely important, but let's just take a look at this. A hospital in Boston has removed a 31-year-old father from the heart transplant list because he refused to get vaccinated against COVID-19. DJ Ferguson is near death and was at the top of the list, but officials at Brigham and Women's Hospital, looks like it says. Anyways, said that he is not eligible for transplant unless he gets vaccinated. Quote, it's kind of against his basic principles. He doesn't believe in it. It's policy they are enforcing, and so because he won't get the shot, they took him off the list for a heart transplant, end quote, his father David told WSBK. David said his son does not believe in vaccine and refuses to get vaccinated, even if it means he could get a new heart. My son has gone to the edge of death to stick to his guns, and he's pushed it to the limit. That's in quotes, he said. The hospital defended its policy on requiring transplant patients to be fully vaccinated. And there's a quote here from the hospital. Look, this is happening in real time. This is happening in real time. I urge you to read the rest of the article. Follow up on the story for yourself, of course. But, you know, some people are going to die. Some people are going to die because they won't comply. And it's not because they didn't comply. It's simply because they won't submit. Anyway, I'm almost speechless over it. But anyway, let's get to some more entertaining stuff that could be out of the clown car of ridiculousness. I mean, after all, the criticism of Biden on a hot mic calling somebody an SOB, I find that hilarious. People are worried about the president and his outbursts now? I don't know. I thought about 5 years ago we gave up on that, didn't we? I thought that wasn't a big deal anymore. Oh, right. He told the faux news, FAUX instead of FOX news. A guy over there, you know, kind of off the cuff, he sort of said, you know, what a dumb SOB, because, I mean, what a ridiculous question, which he mocked the question first and then noted, you know, you got to be stupid to be asking a question like that. I mean, and look at the question objectively. Hey, do you think that, you know, the bad economy is going to affect you in the elections? Duh. Sure it will. No, it's and then Biden kind of responded almost like I would there, which is funny. He shows he's at least able to listen, where he says, you know, well, no, it's a great asset, you dumb SOB. I mean, natural response, but they make a big deal out of that, sure. And here's something they keep overplaying their hand with, which will go nowhere, as per usual, as most, you know, attempts to make the elites pay for their actions and the things they do to others and the things that they inspire others to do. Let's go to something I don't like to cover very much at all, because I think it's going to be a big old political charade, waste of time. And 2022, you're going to see the GOP take back, you know, the tentative control of Congress, and also, you know, break the tie in the Senate and take back the majority. And therefore, you're going to see the GOP agenda and the roadblocks to anything Biden attempts to do. It's just, you know, it's typical. The opposition gets control of one part of the government over the other part, and it doesn't matter if it's D or R, or if they give them new letters in the future. It could be A, B, C, D, or dumbass. Doesn't matter. Yeah, sure. It's not going to matter at all. But that's going to happen in 2022, and then they're going to reintroduce Trump because he's good for ratings. And we're gonna go through another time period of that, and they may indeed, if he survives long enough, they may indeed reinstall him in 2024. So, you know, I will continue to do my show. Some other people have said if they reinstall him, no more shows, stuff like that. Some people I know, but I'll continue to do mine. I mean, somebody's got to report as the multiple elitist Nero Spittle and the new Rome burns. So I'll do my best to keep it there. And who knows? Maybe they'll just put a bullet in my head sometime after they re-inaugurate the grand Agent Orange. Anyways, here's the headline from the New York Post. Let's see. Was this published earlier today? Sure. Oh, by the way, in case you didn't notice in recent headlines, I mean, nothing's going to happen to Cuomo. As was my prediction anyway, and all that. But hey, let's not let all the political chicanery drain away before we can cover some of it. AJ, our friend over there at the InfoHooters, Alex Jones pleaded the Fifth Amendment almost 100 times when questioned by January 6th panel. This is the headline in the New York Post today. Let's see, InfoWars founder and conspiracy theorist Alex Jones you know, excuse me, my parenthetical comment, read that as controlled opposition. And yeah, anyway, revealed Monday that he met with the House Select Committee investigating last year's Capitol riot and, let's see, and exercised his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination almost 100 times. Quote, I just had a very intense experience being interrogated by the January 6th committee, end quote, Jones said on his podcast. Quote, they were polite, but they were dogged, end quote. Jones reportedly met with the committee on Monday and was asked what he described as pretty reasonable questions. Pretty reasonable questions is in quotes. So, quote, and I wanted to answer the questions, end quote, Jones recalled, but at the same time, it was a good thing that I didn't, because I'm the type that tries to answer things correctly, even though I don't know all the answers. Let's just pause for a second. That's a pretty revealing comment there from Jones. All right, sorry. Let me go back to his quote. And they can kind of claim that that's perjury, because about half the questions, I don't know the answer to, end quote. Okay. The podcast host revealed that his lawyer instructed him to plead the Fifth Amendment, quote, almost 100 times during the interrogation, end quote. Okay. So let's pause from the article for a moment here and maybe not return to it at all, because is anybody expecting anything any different here? Jones is a tool of the establishment and is serving his purpose. But I'm not shocked by that and don't really find that to be news. What I find interesting here is the refusal of individuals that want to believe in the you know, the Trumpanzee mythology, that that any of this is actually relevant to them, even with the old standards. And one of the old standards to me is always interesting. A lot of the conservative type speakers out there, and I've listened to many of them. You know, I heard Rush Limbaugh emerge on the East Coast when the EIB network first became a thing there in New York. Listened to him count up the radio stations as he picked them up a couple at a time. Sometimes it was like, you know, the weirdest thing, like, we've just picked up W whatever in Sheboygan, and now we have another place in Florida that has about 5 miles radius for its broadcast, but that's okay. We've picked up 8 more stations this week on the EIB network. I listened to that as it was happening. And found Limbaugh interesting as sort of a speaker for the conservative part of my brain. But anyway, you know, I've watched these guys all along. None of them would ever say that anything other than the following, and I'll tell you, it's a uniform statement. When somebody is choosing to plead the Fifth Amendment, what are they? Guilty. Guilty. Guilty people do this. I don't even know that Jones is guilty of anything, but he certainly wants to be in league with Roger Stone, who is guilty of many things that normally most of us would be in prison for. But if you're an asset of certain people, you don't get punished, and you don't go to prison, and you don't lose your ability to make a living, broadcast, and stuff like that. Not at all. Even when you admit in an open court, like Jones has, that he's basically a performance artist. So the performance artist currently known as Alex Jones, that guy who claimed it during a custody battle and all that good stuff, and him with his domestic violence stuff, which disappeared, and everything else, on and on, and all the dirty little secrets we know about his business practices and how he took advantage of many other people that were positing revisionist history and everything else. Yeah, he's guilty of stuff, but is he guilty of the stuff the 1-6 committee is after? And even if the 1-6 committee gets anything, are they going to do anything other than a limited hangout? They are a House Select Committee. These people do not do real investigations. So, you know, it's one side claiming that they pinned somebody down. But anyway, back to the conservative thing about only criminals plead the fifth. They would always bring this up. You only plead the fifth when, you know, even when they were speculating about what Clinton was going to do regarding the challenge to his perjury in the one lawsuit. What was it, Flowers or Jones? You know, I got it mixed up, but I'll tell you, that was an entertaining series on FX recently. American Crime Story, Impeachment, very entertaining. But either way, he's going to be challenged, right, in one lawsuit about his relationship to Monica Lewinsky. And he lies, and then he has to admit, well, after saying to the American public, I did not have sexual relations with that woman, but I don't define sexual relations in the same way. It depends on what the definition of is. Uh-huh. Sure. They'll point out there that somebody not testifying, not being fully transparent, not giving the whole truth or nothing but the truth as you place your hand on the Bible, as I remember... You know, a fathead doctor shopping Limbaugh screaming a lot. And, you know, other conservatives who have gone out there and said, this is just like when a gangster doesn't want to give. They can't remember. They claim they plead the fifth. They do this. Benghazi. Yeah. Anyway, what do they always say? Somebody who pleads the fifth is guilty. You know they're guilty. It's just a strategic move. That's funny, because Roger Stone just did it. I mean, and he's got almost nothing to fear. I mean, unless there's more stuff he needs to be pardoned for. I mean, Trump got him out of hot water already. Jones has been protected against a whole bunch of things that he's done where he could have been called on the carpet for various statements he's made. Sure, they get kicked off of Twitter. And they get, you know, demonetized on YouTube. And somebody turns around and you know, slaps them with a little bit of mud, because a bit of mudslinging goes on in American politics. And Roger Stone, you know, they stormed into my house at 7 a.m. Dude, you were probably just getting ready to go to sleep. You know, from your night out swapping your wife. I don't know if she's still swappable, but that was something that he got busted for a long time ago. But anyway, I digress. Alex Jones with his 100 times, and he'll tell you on his podcast what he did. I do not urge you to go listen to it. The guy is not a leader of any kind, not even among all of the brainwashed little info warriors out there that he abandons anytime they get in trouble. So I don't even know if he's news. He's certainly not responsible for anything, even if you are seriously offended about what happened on January 6, 2020, the insurrection, which technically is something that, yes, indeed, a lot of people should have gone to prison for, because tell you what, try and go to your state offices there and do stuff like what they did, and you will be labeled a domestic terrorist, even if you're going there to peacefully protest, which there were certain pockets of it not so peaceful. And by the way, buried this week almost seemingly completely is, well, are we going to actually prosecute the Oath Keeper leader guy who has really proven himself to be a solid federal asset in the past? I don't know. Yeah. This whole thing is so just warped and confused about what happened on January 6th. The only thing I can be sure of is that a clear, concise vision of what actually occurred is not, despite all the video footage, is not going to be made public. The House Select Committee on this and that, limited hangout institution that it is, as per usual, just like the House Select Committee on Assassinations was in the 70s, and various other House and Senate Select Committees have been, in the course of my entire lifetime, you're going to get some information. You're going to get a couple of tidbits of this and that and the third thing. And then at the end of it, nothing will be done. Regardless of if there was actually an infraction or an injury to the government, to the people of the U.S., to the dignity, the sovereignty, it's irrelevant. Because it's nothing more than political theater. And the sock puppets are in full play, except they're made of meat, so they are indeed meat puppets. My apologies to the band. And that is who is on the world stage that is the American politic. And that's that. But in the real world consequences category, they're also going to game you on Ukraine, because Ukraine has been a wonderfully useful political pawn for a long time in the U.S., long before, oh, it's a Hillary wanted, yeah, before that. But anyway, they're going to keep playing that game. And in the process, guess what? There are real people that will suffer for the theater of the absurd that is the behavior of the United States government. And the absurdity did not begin with the selection of Trump, did not end with the ejection of Trump, as temporary as I think it is, did not begin with the election of the entity currently known as Joe Biden, who, you know, some days appears sharper than others, that's for sure, when he's not farting on people, and that's fine, I get it. Why not? Perfect, perfect symbols, both of them. Matter of fact, I think a co-presidency between Trump and Biden should be there, and they should have to argue it out with Dr. Phil every week. That would make sense. Trash TV for the trashy-minded who actually believe that these people are worthy of leadership, command and control, respect, any of it. The system is not just rigged. It is rigged to blow up. And all they're waiting for is for somebody to disturb the mercury switches. You get it? Probably not. Probably not. Most people that'll hear this won't. I mean, some of you guys who listen to me all the time, I know you do. I know you do, and I'm preaching to the choir. But, I mean, honestly, I look around at other people who are like, well, Biden is at least a good guy, and Trump's going to bring back the greatness of America. And you don't know how far you have to press down on your emotions in order to not just, I don't know, throw a bucket of vomit on both of these people that say these things when they're in front of you. Because, it's about what they're worthy of. I don't know how these people tie their own shoes. They're just stupid that they think that either side of the alleged equation, you know, either side of the very same coin, is in any way, shape, or form interested in what's good for the people that are running around with the MAGA hats and the go blue and whatever, and I'm on it. Oh, by the way, boycott Pepsi if you're pro-abortion. Just because. You know, there's other things going on, sure, sure. But, you know, if you want to tune into the Coronavirus News Network, they'll give you plenty of updates on, well, now there's a variant of the variant. Literally, not just new things, you know, Delta, Omicron, whatever, we'll give it different letters in the Greek alphabet. No. Now, Omicron has a variant in and of itself, but don't you worry, because a special vaccine is about to be approved just for Omicron. I wonder what it does, though, because I always thought vaccines were supposed to stop you from getting sick, but they don't. Or at least these things don't. And most of the other crap they call vaccines that Big Pharma puts out, well, you know, they don't do you a lot of good either, do they, I guess. Anyway, how's your shingles feeling, people? What is the COVID-19 version of shingles going to be like? Yeah. these questions and many more possibly answered, asked, and abandoned maybe on the rest of the week on the Ocelli Effect, but I know tomorrow night we'll have some interesting shows. I hope you guys will help me out, buy some coffee and everything, because I'm feeling a little dead, but I would really like to make this week yet another interesting one. On Ocelli.com. We won't have Donald Jeffries with us this week for sure. Bob Wilson will have something interesting, and hopefully Aaron Franz and Uncle will continue to be with us throughout the week. But if not, you know what? I'll do my shows, and hopefully I'll get four in this week at the very least. And this is number one for this particular week. And we're almost through the month of January in that thing they call 2022, allegedly. but who knows where it'll go from here. Anyway, thanks for sticking with me. Please consider making some sort of contribution at Ocelli.com, one way or another. There are other ways to get in touch with me and see if you want to contribute something or other to the cause. It all counts. Anyways, no matter who you are, where you are, when you are listening to this, because I know you could be catching it further on down the stream via your fondle slab of choice, your applicable application, your podcatcher du jour, it's okay, because I am merely Ocelli, and all of you are indeed the effect. Good night.